Welcome to Talking Junk.
I'm your host, Jason Melendez.
Live now every week on Fridays.
Talking Junk.
A multitude of professionals in different aspects, different walks of life.
You have to come on and talk junk like a normal person.
Welcome to Talking Junk, the podcast that comes to you live every Friday night from Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Meta? Facebook. Welcome everybody. Thank you for joining me tonight on this Halloween edition of Talking Junk. We got a special guest for you guys tonight, Mr. Stephen Howley Martin. He is a renowned author and a descendant of a supposed Salem witch. I mean, he could tell it better than I can, so why don't we just bring him on? Mr. Martin, how are you?
Hey, Jason. Glad to be here. I'm doing fine. Thanks. Yeah.
Well, I was just telling the audience a little bit about you. Why don't you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Well, I'm... I heard you say something like I'm descended from a supposed witch. That's right. Susanna North Martin was one of the so-called Salem witches. She was accused of witchcraft and was tried and convicted, and they hanged her, you know, from a tree. Along with, I think with the day she was hanged, there were four other women also hanged. But as far as who I am, I spent most of my adult life and career in the advertising agency business. And it was a lot of fun. But I was a partner in the Martin Agency, which has gotten to be a huge success. It was a big success when I was in it, but it even better after I left. That's the business that created the Geico Gecko and Virginia's for Lovers and a number of big campaigns. It's a major ad agency. And after that, I started my own agency and had that for a number of years, sold it to Interpublic, which is a ad agency holding company that's listed on the New York Stock Exchange. And that's when I started into the publishing business and writing full time. I'd already written a couple of books and had them published, but I decided I could do a better job publishing them than the publishers that were publishing my books. And so I started a business called the Oakley Press. And we've now got over 100 books in print. And I've written a whole bunch of them myself, probably about three dozen. And I also do a lot of ghostwriting and editing. And, you know, if people want to publish a book, I'd love to hear from them. Go to my website and send me an email, shmartin.com, shmartin.com.
I love the cheap pop. I love it.
you know, I was in the ad game. I know about, you know, putting a little promotion in every now and then.
Well, before we get into your days in advertisement, is that why the Geico Gecko's name is Martin?
Well, the Geico Gecko was created because it was really to solve a problem that... Geico, people didn't know how to pronounce that name when they started really promoting themselves. It stands for a government employee insurance company. And mainly for many, many years, all they did was insure government employees. And then they decided to go big time and they hired us. And people looked at that word, G-E-I-C-O, and they sort of said, Geico. And so... in order to get the name across, we invented the, some people call it a lizard. It's not really a lizard. It's a Geico and a gecko. So anyway, it worked. And he's still going strong after about 25 years, I guess. I think they spend now about $1 billion a year promoting that business. And it's grown dramatically and been very, very successful. So the Geico Gecko worked.
Well, is that the only big business you've advertised for?
Oh, no. Now they're, we've done Mercedes-Benz, UPS, Oreo cookies. you know, there's a whole slew of them now. I'm no longer involved in advertising. I did that for a long, long time. But for the last 5 or 6 years, I've been concentrating solely on the Oakley Press, my publishing business, and writing books and editing books and ghostwriting books and, you know, designing books, doing the covers, all that sort of business. I love it. I enjoy it very much. I really like words and creating and all that. So I'm enjoying my time doing this and promoting the books. That's what I'm doing tonight. The Witch of Amesbury, Susanna North Martin. Very interesting story about my ancestor who really had a big influence on my family. I mean, I grew up, my brother and my sister, and I grew up hearing all kinds of tales about the Witch of Amesbury, our ancestor, and it kind of made me who I am in a way, because, you know, I don't necessarily believe what people in authority have to say. You know, I have to check it out for myself, and I don't always follow the conventional wisdom, and I think it's kind of made me who I am and helped me in the advertising business to think outside the box. And and also when I write my books and stories and so forth, it's kind of fun to have that ancestor back there who must have been a very feisty old lady, because she she was in her 70s when they accused her and hanged her, and that was pretty old back then. And she had already been accused and tried once before, about 30 years earlier, probably about, I think, 1646, she was tried and acquitted of being a witch. So,
wow.
I think she had quite a reputation, and she didn't suffer fools well. She made enemies, let's put it that way.
Well, you mentioned stories, and before you decided to dive deep into your ancestry on this book, you said you had about 13 other novels?
No, I've written 5 novels. There, one of them is a murder mystery that takes place in an advertising agency called Death in Advertising. I've written a couple of thrillers, I guess you'd say. One is a paranormal thing where it takes place during a presidential campaign. It's called The Luciferian Candidate, and it has to do with spirit possession and so forth, but kind of a fun novel. And then I've written a couple of one that's a very kind of metaphysical thriller that has some out-of-body kind of supernatural stuff going on, called The Secret of Life, an adventure out of body into mind. And then another one I've got is called The Search for Nina Fletcher, and it's a thriller, but it has a romance in it too. So it could be characterized as a romantic suspense novel. And it takes place in Baltimore and in Corsica, the island off the coast of France. It is part of France, but it's where Napoleon was born, of course. So, yeah. And then I've written a bunch of business books, and I've written probably my best-selling book, continues to sell well, is called Life After Death, Powerful Evidence You Will Never Die. And it's where I have investigated a lot of research that's going on at the University of Virginia and at Duke University and other places about near-death experiences and reincarnation and the whole mind-body thing. And does the brain create consciousness, or is the brain a receiver of consciousness? And that book continues to sell well because it does really make a strong case for the fact that we are eternal beings having a physical experience. We're eternal spiritual beings who are having a temporary physical experience. That's what the conclusion I come to in that book. So if you want to talk about that, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, we can talk about whatever you'd like. And is this the book that you're referring to?
It is. Yeah. Yeah, there you are. Uh-huh. It's an audiobook published. The audiobook was published by Books in Motion. And of course, it's in paperback, hardcover, and Kindle. So you can take your pick which way you want to or listen to it.
Well, I would love to get a audio book version of anything that you've written with you narrating it.
Well, thank you. I have not ever, I've got a number of my books have been made into audiobooks, but I've never been the narrator. I guess I should give that a whirl. I mean, I'd like to do that, actually.
I would also be happy to narrate one for you.
Oh, you probably got a good voice for that.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah, I see you could do the characters.
Just a tad, just a tad. My co-host was usually here with me. He can do a couple more. So, the Witch of Amesbury.
Yeah, that's she. Was not actually live in Salem. She lived in a town called Amesbury that was about I think eight or 10 miles away from Salem Village, which where the trials took place and where most of the people who were caught up in it or accused of being witchcraft and witches lived. But her reputation was probably pretty far and wide because they didn't take long to get around to her when they were making their accusations. I think she was about the fifth one that was charged. And there were probably over the whole course of the thing about 150 people, both men and women, mostly women, but some men who were accused and of witchcraft. And there were 19 that were executed, and one who was a man who was killed because they were trying to get him to make a plea. They couldn't try him unless he pleaded guilty or not guilty, and he refused to enter a plea. And so they laid him down, and they started piling rocks on his chest to make him give a plea. And the famous last words from this guy were, "More weight." And they put another rock on and it crushed his chest. And that was the end of him.
Well, before we dive more deeper into that, Denny Lopez asks, do you believe we just keep reincarnating?
I think that we've all incarnated, probably most of us have incarnated many, many times already, hundreds probably. I think that eventually, if we ever get it right, we might stop incarnating. And I compare it to the, I'm sure most of your listeners and viewers have seen the movie Groundhog Day. I think that's kind of what it's like. You know, you keep coming back facing the same kind of issues until you get it right. And most of us make pretty bad decisions a lot of the time. So we keep coming back, over and over. And I think the whole purpose of life is evolution, and that's what we're here to do, is to make decisions, exercise our free will, and learn from it, and eventually evolve to where we get it right, and then we can go on to some other reality than this one here on this physical plane of reality here on Earth.
But until then, it's almost like a multiverse type of theory where you're just going to keep coming back.
Yeah, you know, we build up karma.
Things are going to change.
Yeah, you know, and the things change. But that poor guy, Bill Murray's character in that movie, he kept coming back to February 2nd, and he faced the same thing every time. And when he started out, of course, he was a real jerk and very self-centered. And then he was finally toward the end, you know, he's actually helping people out and saving them and all that. And when he goes through the thing and gets it all right, he not only gets to move on to February 3rd, but he gets the girl, you know, so it worked out. But it took him a lot of times before he got it right. And that's the way it is with us, I think. You know, we just keep coming back till we get it right.
Now, going back real quick, I know I'm bouncing all over the place, but how did it feel growing up being told one of your ancestors was a witch?
Well, the question was she a witch? And that's certainly what I address in this book. I think that there were some people back then in that whole Massachusetts Bay Colony thing that the witch hysteria, I guess, is what people call it, that we're actually practicing witchcraft. And that doesn't mean they should get executed for it. But Susanna, I think she was accused of being a witch because she was a very strong woman. She was, by the time she was accused and tried the second time and actually convicted, she was in her 70s, but she was able to, she was a widow. Her children had all grown and left the house, and she's living alone, but she was able to take care of the farm, you know, to chop the firewood, to plow the field, to do all that stuff herself. And they figured there was no way a woman could do that on her own, especially in her 70s, unless she used magic or witchcraft to do it. And that was a big part of what she what people thought and why she was probably accused. But she also was pretty feisty, from what I can tell. But as far as growing up, my mother was really almost obsessed with this, because I grew up in the 1950s, and my mother was kind of an early feminist. She was a career woman. She worked in advertising as well. So did my father. But my father died when I was fairly young, and my mother raised me and my sister. My brother had already gone on to college when my father died, but she was a strong woman, an early feminist, and she was just appalled with the idea that there was this ancestor in the family who could have been accused of witchcraft and executed. And so we heard about it all the time, and we heard about a lot of the family lore about what caused it. For example, one of the stories that I heard a number of times was that she, one of the witnesses in the trial that testified against her, saying she must be a witch, was a friend of hers who had lived quite a ways away from her, from Susanna. And Susanna had come to her house, had walked probably about 8 miles to get there in the spring when the snow was melting in Massachusetts and it was muddy. And when she got to this friend's house, she didn't have any mud on her dress or on her shoes. And she came into the house no mud on her shoes. So the testimony was that she must have flown there. You know, she must have taken her broom and flown there. Well, probably all she did was take her shoes off and hold her skirt up. And when she got there, washed her feet off, put the shoes on, went in the house. But they thought she had flown there. So anyway, I heard about it all the time, and it really did influence how I thought about people in authority and so forth. That, you know, I'm still the same. I have to check it out for myself. I don't believe what they say on first blush, especially politicians nowadays. They all lie.
So, oh yeah. Yeah. So what ultimately led you to write the book?
Well, I just wanted to find out for myself and to see maybe she was practicing witchcraft. You know, I thought I'd check that out. And so there is a huge amount of information that is available. It's amazing. And you can get it all online now. I think there's a website that a professor at the University of Virginia has. I think he teaches a class on it. Actually, my daughter took the class.
Wow.
She went to the University of Virginia, and he's got all the documents, all the depositions that were taken, all the trial testimony that was taken, all of that. I mean, everything you could imagine. Plus, there are a number of books that have been written by eyewitnesses who, you know, were there. And so there's a huge amount of information. And I just took some time and dug into it all and wrote this book. And
so is it true she wasn't allowed counsel?
They didn't have any public defenders. One thing you have to realize, and this is very important, the Massachusetts Bay Colony was a theocracy. Mm-hmm. Charles I, who was king at the time, granted a charter to John Winthrop, who was a preacher, you know, Puritan preacher, to start this place in Massachusetts that the Puritans could have. He called it a city on a hill, a light to the world. I think Reagan used that in one of his speeches. That was going to be a theocracy. It was the Bible was the law book. They didn't use English laws. They didn't use any. They used the Bible. And in the Bible, I think it's in Exodus, after the Ten Commandments are given to Moses, there are a bunch of laws, little laws that follow that. I have a good friend who's Jewish, and he says there's 640 of them. Things like, you know, not lighting a fire on the Sabbath, and you know that not using. That's why they walk to temple and so forth, and why they have to cook their food on Fridays if they can eat it on Saturday. Things like that. And one of the laws that's in there is thou shalt not allow a sorceress to live. Mm. So that's...
it's pretty wicked to be in the Bible.
It's in the Bible, in the Old Testament. And it's interesting because Susanna, as I said, she was a smart cookie and she didn't put up with much. And when she was first brought into the meeting house, where the courtroom was, some of the witnesses that are accusers of her saw her and were gripped with fear and fell on the floor, writhing in so-called pain and so forth, like she was. And the judge, his name was Hawthorne, and I think he was the grandfather of the guy who wrote the House of the Seven Gables. Nathaniel Hawthorne was his grandson. Asked the people writhing on the floor, what's happening? And they said, her specter is coming and torturing us. You know, specter being like her ghost or her spirit or her non-physical self was coming after them.
And astral projection.
Yeah. And so the judge asked Susanna, you know, why do you torture these people? And she said, it's not me, judge. The devil, Satan must have taken my image, my form. And then she went on to quote scripture. I believe it's in the book of Samuel. King Saul goes to a woman called the Witch of Endor and has the Witch of Endor conjure up Samuel's spirit. Samuel was dead. Samuel was a prophet who had been kind of Saul's mentor. Conjure up the ghost of Samuel. And the Puritans didn't believe that it was really the ghost of Samuel that was conjured up. They believed that it was Satan taking Samuel's image, who was talking to Saul and giving him bad advice. So Susanna quoted that and said, look, you know, if Satan can take the image of a saint, Saint Samuel, he can certainly take my image and pretend to be me torturing these people. That should have gotten her off.
Now, that was one of the things that apparently a witch couldn't do was quote Bible scripture.
Well, they couldn't. And they couldn't say the Lord's Prayer, for example. They couldn't say the word God or Jesus. And yet, in fact, one of the people who was accused and tried and hanged, and by the way, the past tense of the verb to hang is when it's a person, they're hanged. It's a picture, they're hung. It's hung. But was this guy who had been the preacher in a Salem village before. And while he was standing there waiting to be hanged, he said the Lord's Prayer, which was supposed to be impossible for a witch. But they hanged him anyway. So there you go.
But what when she quoted scripture, somebody said the devil's servant was capable of putting on a show, perfect innocence and godliness.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, and you know, they certainly didn't. They wanted to hang her. They didn't want to be, you know, have to look at the facts, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
They already had it in their mind what they were going to do. So
back then, it was said a lot of the accused were just being accused by their rival neighbors.
There probably was some of that who just wanted to get their land or, you know, whatever. There was motives like that. But the conclusion I came to is the big part of it was that what was known scientifically and so forth back then was just totally, they didn't know, for example, that germs caused sickness. They didn't know that germs existed. They thought that if somebody's cow dropped dead, it was because maybe their neighbor had put a curse on the cow or cursed the cow and the cow didn't give milk, or, you know, a child got sick, got strep throat and died. They thought it was the God was punishing them or that Satan had done it. You know, they didn't know why people got sick. And so you have to really, and I go into this in the book, understand where these people were coming from. And belief, that's another thing that I bring out in this book. The power of belief is tremendous. You know, there are all kinds of studies have been done, and whenever a new drug is tested, they always have a placebo, and they have so the control group, and
the little sugar pill.
The sugar pill, and often the sugar pill, the placebo, will outperform the medicine. I give some examples of that in this book. And for example, in primitive societies that have witch doctors and shaman and so forth, people who are cursed by a witch doctor will actually drop dead, literally die. I mean, if you or I were cursed by some guy dancing around with a spear, we'd laugh and it wouldn't affect us. It's the person who's cursed belief that he's going to die that causes it. And so people really believed in witches, and they probably believed they were being attacked by them. You know, if you lied in bed, you're worried about being attacked by the specter of Susanna Martin. I mean, her specter will just come right out from under the bed and go after you. You know, I mean, it's all in their mind, so to speak. So.
Where are you on the theory that it all started with some fungus-filled bread?
I've read that theory and looked at, you know, I don't think so. I mean, it was too widespread and it lasted too long for that to have been some kind of rye bread that gets some mold in it that causes hallucinations. I don't think that was it. I think here's how it started.
No rye LSD. Come on, Mr. Martin.
maybe it was magic mushrooms. I don't know. But maybe a little marijuana on top of it. But what happened is the preacher, his name was Paris, Reverend Paris, had two children. He and his wife had two children. One was 8, and then the other one was like 12 years old, the girls. They were girls. And during that winter leading up to the witch hysteria, he apparently was gone a lot, you know, around the countryside tending to his flock and who were, you know, either sick or whatever, maybe funerals and stuff. And they had, the family had two slaves who lived with them. They were married. The slaves was a man and a woman. It was Tituba and John Indian. And Tituba and John were Carib Indians that had come with the parent.
Me and my wife were listening to a little bit of Tituba history in the car today.
Yeah. Well, she was from Barbados and was not a Christian. She was, you know, whatever religion Indians have, which was kind of like voodoo and stuff. And so she entertained these children with magic tricks and fortune telling. And the children knew that they should not be participating in stuff like that. I mean, it was pretty
blasphemy.
Blasphemy, you know, anything to do with magic had to do with the devil and to the dark side, you know, and the demonic figures and so forth. And so, but they were entertained by her, and apparently, and I think, you know, there was probably something to the idea that it kind of opened up something. Anybody who's messed around with a Ouija board, just Google Ouija warning. Those things can really get
guilty.
Wild.
Guilty as charged. Yeah.
Have you had things that started being really weird when you were doing it?
Oh, more than really weird. My little brothers can attest, and one of my cousins can also. We lived right across the street from a cemetery over there in New York in the Bronx. We lived across the street from the Norwood Cemetery. So we, being knuckleheads and not believing in anything, we actually went into the cemetery and we played the Ouija board. We played in multiple buildings, and we've just had weird things happen in that neighborhood. Weird things happen to people we love. It was mind-blowing, to say the least. Yeah.
Well, I think there was some of that going on with Tituba and her magic tricks, that she did kind of open up a door. But anyway, the children, it wasn't just the two girls who were the daughters. They had their friends over. It was about a half a dozen women, young women and girls from 8 to about 16 or 17. And they were being entertained with these magic tricks and stuff and fortune telling. And they started having these symptoms where they would, go have fits, kind of like an epileptic fit. And so the preacher started questioning, who's doing this? What's happening? And they kept being pressed when they would have these fits. And they finally ended up accusing Sarah Good, who was kind of the town beggar, and she was an easy mark. But anyway, that's what got it all started. So I think it was the Tituba, and then Tituba eventually was accused too, as you probably know. And she readily admitted that she was practicing witchcraft, which, of course, got her off the hook. Because back then, if you admitted you were practicing witchcraft and you confessed and you apologized and you asked God for forgiveness, it got you off the hook because, you know, it was between you and God then and no longer the community. So, but my ancestor couldn't do that because Puritans believed that the Ten Commandments were really not just suggestions like we do now. Yeah. And one of the commandments is thou shalt not bear false witness. In other words, you can't lie.
This is probably one of the solid reasons we had to separate law and religion.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think that's probably one of the outcomes of this whole thing, was that people realized it wasn't a good idea to mix the two. But anyway, if they were to confess falsely that they were, I did it, but I'm going to ask God for forgiveness and get off, they might get off, save their neck, but they would go to hell because they had broken one of the Ten Commandments, you know. So they were in a bind, and a lot of them just went to the gallows and were hanged.
So 19 people, including Susanna, died because they didn't want to admit to something they weren't doing.
Exactly, exactly. Now, there were people who confessed and got off, but those 19 did not, and I believe she was hanged in the first group. I think there were five women who were hanged in that on July 19th, 1693 or 92. And then later on, there were more hanged. But it was something. And the big argument against it was this spectral evidence being admitted in the trial. Because in England, which was, you know, had a whole different set of laws, because it was not a theocracy, even though the king, of course, is the head of the Church of England, king or queen, whoever's in the monarch, spectral evidence was not allowed in England. And so there were people who said, you know, you can't do this. You can't accept this kind of evidence. And so that was the big argument against it. And eventually, I think that argument won out. That and the fact that the preacher guy said the Lord's Prayer right before he was hanged.
But there was really huge differences between the American witch trials and the European witch trials, which they lasted hundreds of years over there. Ours only lasted, what, a year or so?
Well, there were... that particular episode, the Salem witch trials, lasted a little less than a year, probably about 6 months. But there had been other trials in New England before that. Susanna had been tried before and acquitted, but there were others that were tried and convicted. Now, the one that I write about in the book is a woman called Goody Glover, who I think was practicing witchcraft, and she, for example, when she was in her cell, Cotton Mather, who was a preacher, came to visit her a few times, and he would hear her talking to the devil. I mean, I think today she would be diagnosed as being schizophrenic, but she was talking to the devil. And when she was being tried, they brought her some effigy dolls, voodoo type dolls, that were hers. And when she started stroking it, one of the witnesses that was about to testify against her fell on the floor in an epileptic type fit. So yeah, she was definitely a witch. They hanged her too, and that was only about 4 or 5 years before the Salem episodes, the Salem witch trials.
Cotton Mather was the one that stated devil servants were capable of putting a show. Perfect innocence of godliness in Susanna's defense.
Yeah. He was very much into it all, and his father was against it. They were not on the same page. They were both preachers, but anyway, Cotton Mather had written a book about the Goody Glover case, the one that I just mentioned, where she had been talking to the devil and when she's in her cell. And he had investigated all of that and had actually brought the children who were supposed to being bewitched by Goody Glover into his home to study them. And I put some information about that in the book. It's very interesting because one of them, apparently, he says, actually levitated. Now, listen, you know, Cotton Mather was a graduate of Harvard University, so. But little did they know back then, I guess. But anyway, it's interesting. It's a fascinating book. I hope people check it out. Come to my website, shmartin.com, and you'll find it there. And click on the menu item that says books, and you'll see most of my books and be able to check them out.
Now, what was the website? Because I only looked you up before the show on Amazon. Sadly.
Yeah, it's there's the Witch of Amesbury. It's shmartin, shmartin.com. Try that.
Gotcha. We're going to pull it up right now.
I think I put the witch because of our little talk tonight. Yeah, there she is. If you were to click on that. Now click on books up at the top there. Yeah, there's some of my books.
The Truth About Life and How It Makes Yours the Best of All.
How to Make Yours the Best of All, yeah. Yeah, so this is not every book I've written, but it's a lot of them. I've only got one of my business books on there, it looks like. And I've written about
it. Oh, it takes you straight to it. Okay, so it does take you straight to the Amazon page. Now I don't feel like a total goof for just putting the Amazon link up there.
Yeah.
Now, I do want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. And we want to, like I said just before the show, I want to extend the invitation to the break room tomorrow night. We're going to talk a little bit about the Salem witch trial. So if you're free, we would love to have you.
Okay. Well, how do I just find you on YouTube or something like that?
We're on YouTube. We're on Twitter. We're on Twitch. We're on Periscope. That is Twitter. On Facebook, wherever you're located. I sent you my link tree there. You can find us wherever you prefer.
Okay. Well, I'd like to do that. And I'd like to tell your listeners, if you have a book you want to publish or you need editing or ghostwriting, I'm open for business. Come to my website, send me an email, and we'll start a conversation.
Well, don't go anywhere. I'd like to have a conversation about something of the sort. Thank you guys for tuning in tonight. Again, tune in tomorrow night for the break room. We're going to talk the Salem witch trials. And be sure to go to Mr. Martin's website and buy one of his books, or buy all of his books.
Yeah, please do. SHMartin.com.
SHMartin.com. Don't forget, we're live every Friday night. Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, and Twitter. Well, Facebook is soon going to be called Meta, but we'll still be coming live from Meta. if they let us. But you can also catch us wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you and good night.
Good night.
Don't go nowhere, Mr. Martin.